We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 8 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson, and we're delighted to have you join us in our podcast environment. And as expected, we have another fierce female among us today. We're excited to welcome Dr. Christy Barrett. So let's learn a little bit more about this exciting guest. Dr. Barrett has served in the field of education for over 20 years, and during this time, she has served it both as a regular and special ed teacher, a principal, an assistant superintendent, and now a superintendent. Dr. Barrett also serves as the Healthy Valley Foundation Vice President, a Western Science Center board member, and is the Hemet Action Group member. Dr. Barrett's involvement in the community is driven by her belief that the important work of educating and supporting our youth is not limited to the boundaries of the district, but is an imperative to the community's overall success.
Dr. Barrett is another outstanding Shero in education, and each week we explore models of leadership together from what our guests see in the mirror, in other words, the reflections of themselves, mentors who have impacted them, and then considering the mirror and mentors, we turn to movements we should all be watching that inspire or ignite maverick moments. It's what we like to call our honor roll pattern of M.
And while we're thinking of that pattern, Keisha, don't forget, we also want to catch any of that, what we refer to as edubabble, you know, to make sure that our listening community understands and connects to what is being said. And I caught a phrase while I was introducing Christy. Christy, welcome to our podcast. And I'm wondering, can you jump in and tell us how you would describe, or what do you mean by boundaries of the district?
Thank you for this opportunity. And I'm excited to share that with you. We have synergy here in the communities that we serve because we have the mindset that the walls of the district are permeable. The work that we lead on behalf of the 22,000 students in our district isn't limited to the students. It's also about the greater good in the community and what we can do collectively when people come together from different spaces around this idea of what does the betterment of the community mean and how can we all contribute to that success?
Wow, that sounds incredible. I hope everyone listening hears that definition and embodies it and takes it into their communities. I think we would all be better for it. Now let's start with the first M models. Christy, are you ready?
I am.
Okay. Who are your role models and why?
I'll start with a principal that I had during my first couple of years of teaching, and that was Martha McCarthy. I had no idea around this idea of not having tenure, and that people kind of tiptoe around because they're afraid that they're going to be non-reelected. And Martha just had such a way about her, which is, I think, in part why I just didn't have that filter. And I went to her very early on. I might not have even been in my second year yet as a probationary teacher, and said to her, I want to do what you do. And in hindsight, after talking to people about my story, they're like, are you crazy? Like, why did you say that? And I'm like, what do you mean? It, you know, I had no idea that, you know, really she could have laughed at me and said, you know, girl, you got to get some time underneath your belt before you're talking about these ideas of moving into a leadership role or into the principal position. But she didn't do that at all. She didn't laugh at me. She took me very serious. And within a matter of truthfully, a month, she had engaged me in the site leadership team as a probationary teacher. She gave me opportunity to lead different events at the school site. And so she embraced me. It wasn't about the time in the seat. It was about what she saw in me as a person. And I think the other piece about Martha, which still holds true today, is her moral compass is just absolutely unwavering. It's not about making the adults happy. It's about understanding you need the adults to do the work. But at the end of the day, the reasons we make the decisions we do is all about kids. And so you can endure a lot when you're very clear about your why. And she modeled that in everything that she did. And it has stuck with me. I will tell you, over the course of my career, you know, we have people in our lives that have difficult conversations with us. And I can say, even to date, Martha pushed me most in terms of my personal and professional development and the critical conversations that she was willing to have. I would say, in addition to that, I look at my children as role models. In fact, I texted them this morning in preparation to come here. There's just a lot of wisdom in our children, and not even just our personal children, but just in youth in general, right? And so there are things that cause me to spin or flame out, and they will come to me and say, "Mom, like, you got to keep it in perspective, like scope of life kind of stuff," right? And I'm like, "Huh, thank you for sharing that." And so I think to be in a space where I can engage in with my own children in that way, that's such a gift. And I want them to know that their willingness to speak up to their mother and say, "Hey, did you think about this?" I think that's exceptional. And so they have certainly served as role models for me.
Beautiful. From your children to Martha, I love that they really support you in that unwavering compass, as you said. And one of the many things I've learned from you is that you always speak about the importance of integrity. And there's a quote that says, "A person is not given integrity. It results from the relentless pursuit of honesty at all times." And so as you think about that, who are the mentors in this space for you, and how have they mentored you?
You know, when I think about mentors, I think we apply a definition to that. And I had read a book some time ago, Lean In, and it speaks to mentors in that book. And that was an aha moment for me. Like, what really is a mentor? And I will say that, yes, Martha was a role model. And I think I could even cross over and say that she's a mentor. But I would say the most influential and meaningful mentors that I've had over the course of my career are Dr. Carl Cohn and Dr. Kent Beckler. And the reason for that is it's layered, right? Not only have they been very successful in their roles in public education, but they've been in a lot of spaces, and right? So they understand not only the role of the superintendency, but contextually, what does this mean in the bigger space, right? Nationally, in the state, et cetera. The other thing about these two individuals is that they approach all things through the lens of integrity. And so as I've come to them at different points of my journey as a superintendent over the last 5 years, it's nice because they've been able to serve as a North Star. And when you're faced with difficult decision-making or challenges from the community or the board or labor, these two individuals have experienced much of what I may experience today. And they've already had to lead through it. And so they understand not only what worked and what didn't, but how can you lead it with integrity? And so I appreciate that about them. And the other thing that is unique about these two individuals is that they keep in the focus that I'm a female. And both of them have very intentionally coached me, mentored me around my position as a female superintendent. Carl will push me and say, you need to come at this issue this way, and don't let the fact that you're a female influence the way that you address that. You know, different conversations that I have with a male dominant board, as an example. You know, with Kent, he tries to give me a lot of advice, and he pushes me around having more of that work-life integration balance. And he'll say, well, you know, what are you doing for yourself? And I'll, you know, we'll talk about that. And he goes, well, why don't you do more? And often my response will be, well, because I feel guilty. And he's like, well, do you think a man feels guilty? You know, and it's those kind of just very candid, honest conversations. It's like, it causes you to pause. And so it's good to have them both to lean on and to learn from as I continue on my journey.
You know, there, it sounds like, I mean, obviously you've been mentored by such strong individuals, and you have an amazing role model in Martha, but to have a male role model or male mentors to kind of help you navigate that space, I think is very telling and very helpful. And I think of all the ladies that we've had on our podcast, I can't think of many who've actually called out a male mentor. So I think that's, you know, that's really special and probably a gift for you, as you said, as you're kind of navigating a male dominated board and those kinds of things. So you are in an incredible leadership position, and you have done amazing work in that position, and, you know, have incredible influence and reach. When did you look in the mirror and know you were a leader?
So this hits close to my heart, and I would say that Martha handed me the mirror. I was in my second year of teaching, and as Frances mentioned in the introduction, I was initially teaching in a classroom serving students with disabilities. And I had that conversation with her about wanting to be in a leadership role during those 2 years. And as I transitioned into my third year of teaching, I talked with her that I was very concerned that people might not see me as credible because I had not had experience in the regular education classroom. And so I made a decision to put in for transfer to another school site that had a general education opening. And that was a wonderful experience in that people lead in different ways. And so I had this person who is still today, I just hold in such high regard. And I was able to compare what her leadership looked like compared to where I went. And there was learning from both spaces. And all of that to say, it was in that third year where the district that I was at the time had a series of vacancies that came about. We had a couple of assistant principal positions that had come open, as well as a principal position. And so I knew that I wanted to be a leader, but I didn't really, I think at that point, have confidence in myself that I could really pull it off. And so I was only gonna apply for the assistant principal positions. And so it was, I will never forget this. It was on the day that the applications were due. I had only put in my application for the assistant principal positions. And Martha called me, and she was very well connected at the district office. So I know that that was not by happenstance, but she called me and she said, did you put your application in for the principal position? And I said, no. I said, I don't have a lot of experience in education yet. And I didn't, because I didn't think that I would even be considered. And she's like, you're making a mistake. She's like, you need to apply for the principal position. So I quickly called Becky, who was the personnel individual that was leading the recruitment for the principal position. And I said, Becky, I said, I want to put my name in the ring for the principal position. I said, but I'm down to the last minute here. And she says, Christy, don't worry. She's like, I will just take the same application and I will, you know, show that you have submitted. And sure enough, I got an interview. The district that I was in, very much valued that the staff of that particular site, in all of their hirings across the district, had voice in the selection process. And the next thing you know, I was selected to be the principal of Village Elementary. And I will tell you that up until my current role, that by far was the best experience I've had in my career in public education. It was just so fulfilling, and they hold a very special place in my heart. And in fact, today I still have a picture in my office of me and the Village team. So it was great, but it was really through that push of Martha that I can truthfully say it was that showed me that I had the ability to be a leader.
That love of the principalship can never be taken away.
No. So
I think anybody who's been a principal has always said it's the hardest job they've ever loved, right?
That's right. Absolutely.
I'm noticing that we have another pattern of M showing up with Martha. And so I'm almost if we should have like a poster that says, what would Martha do? So as you think about these amazing women and also the male leaders who have leaned in to push you as a female leader to be fierce. So how do you see women like yourself changing the world?
I think about this through the lens of the flywheel concept, right? You have to, over a period of time, to get momentum and synergy around the work, and to have women have a space in that work. And so I know it is not simple in regards to what you're asking, but I just think it's this relentless effort that we as females continually push for, not only in the professional sense, but also just the issues around inequality in society in general, outside of the professional space. And so I really, I think we have a lot to offer, of course, in terms of the global intellectual capacity of what it is that we can do in our contributions. But I see it as being this, relentless pursuit of changing the world, being contributors to that. And we do that just one step at a time. I think about, just look at what's happened in the last 5 years, right? And when I think about contributors to this flywheel concept, 5 years ago, we got our first full-time NFL female coach, right? Who would have ever have thought that would have happened? And, of course, now with, Kamala Harris being vice president-elect, and before her, Hillary Clinton, running for the presidency. And I'm wanting to be nonpartisan in my comments, but these are women that have taken a step forward, that have created openings for other people, and really have created a space where synergy can happen. You look, even at our nation's military, right? I think that too, within the last 5 years, we now have women who can go, in a combat space in every arm of our nation's military. So I think these are just examples where we have needed to be very much advocates for ourselves, and that we can be value added, and we do absolutely have a space across sectors, but that doesn't happen without intentional and relentless work on the part of each one of us.
No, you're so right. And speaking of intentional work, are there any kind of mavericks out there that are disturbing the system that you're watching that others should watch?
I'm going to take you a little bit left field, in that I've been watching more what are some true threats to the forward progress that we've made, because I think what we're experiencing with COVID-19 is a real disruption, and it's the wrong kind of disruption. And so I think absolutely there are mavericks that we should and can follow, but I think it's going to take the coming together of the mavericks, if you will, to help stabilize the current situation and not have the gains that we've made in gender inequality over the last decade, two decades, come to an abrupt halt and crumble right before our eyes within the period of a year. COVID-19 and the impact that it's had specific to females that needs to be paid attention to. It's significant.
Yeah, that impact has amplified what we've known for so long around self-care. And as female leaders, it's a definite challenge. And you've had some mentors that have supported you in that space. Recently, Manisha Singhal, she's an MD for internal medicine, and she's been working on the front lines with the battle of cancer and supporting her COVID patients. And she was recently quoted as saying, "I make it a point to practice self-care. I make an appointment with myself." And so as you think about yourself as a superintendent, so many people, as we know, are truly scheduling your time, right? And so how do you make sure in that self-care space that you make an appointment for yourself? And when you do that, what do you do? What are some insights that you can provide to our listeners?
We talk, in fact, I was talking with a female medical doctor who also, I just feel very fortunate to have as a board member here in Hemet. And we were actually having this conversation yesterday in that it really isn't about work-life balance. It's about work-life integration. And once you can put your head around this idea that there's an ebb and flow to what we do, I think it becomes not easy, but you become more accepting that if you don't interrupt that ebb and flow, you don't even have integration. And so of work and life. And truthfully, I will tell you what gives me the ability to make time for myself and self-care are my mentors. Part of what they have taken upon themselves is calling me and say, and this is legit. I mean, Dr. Beckler and Dr. Cohn, and they are not in cahoots with each other. They will call and say, "What are you doing to take care of yourself? How are you doing?" And it's because they continually push me that I stop and I pause to take care of myself. And so, you know, some ways that I do that, of course, you know, we have to take care of our physical health. And, you know, I'm leveraging telemedicine right now because as many of you have also experienced, you know, our annual exams, which we just know are a great practice. You know, those things have been canceled. And so it's like, okay, now where do I find time in the land of COVID to be able to go to a physician who's already inundated with all these things? It would be very easy to say, I'm just not going to do that. Right. But to leverage something like telemedicine, which, you know, I never did that prior to COVID. It serves two purposes. One, it gives me access in the space and time that we're in. But also, I think my learning from that is I can do a better job taking care of myself because I don't now have to schedule, you know, time for commuting and those kinds of things to my physician. So I hope that answers the question. But I think it's pushed me to think different about how I take care of myself and, you know, how technology can be a part of that. I will also say that just in making the best of what we have, there's still so much to be thankful for. And I think at times I find myself grieving in that there's just so much loss. You know, we want to have our kids in person. We want to be able to interact with other people that are like-minded in a way where you're face-to-face and not in this virtual, you know, environment. And so to overcome that, you know, you recalibrate, and now we have dinner together as a family. So we're building a different set of muscles, right? We're having game nights as a family. We're having dinner together as a family. And I think those things will carry forward post-COVID and needing to, you know, stay at home to stay safe and those types of things.
You pointed out the incredible challenges that everybody's thinking about during this super challenging time that will forever be in our history worldwide, but also just that it changed the way we think about everything and even our own self-care. So we have a little exercise that we play with our guests to keep our audience members titillized. And it's sentence starters. So I'm going to start, and then you can finish the sentence. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. An event that changed my world view.
Yeah, so I don't see myself as worldly. So that's a challenging one to finish. I would say that I would not point to any single event that has changed my world view. I think it's an accumulation of life experiences that has given me the view that I have on the world.
Beautiful. And I have one of those sentence starters too, Christy.
So right, let's go.
How about you answer this one for us? I became a stronger person after?
After I learned how to forgive. I was very transient growing up. I will say that I never felt that I was out without love by my parents, but I had a very challenging upbringing. My dad passed away about 7-8 years ago now by overdosing. And that substance issue was something that I've dealt with along with my mother over the course of my life. And after he passed away, I had a lot of anger towards my mom. And because I was always the adult in the family, even though I was the child. And it wasn't until the last few years where I really recognized the abuse that she experienced and truly forgive her, and knowing that she did the best that she could. And it wasn't the space that she wanted to be in. And so just through coming to terms with all of that, forgiving her, forgiving my dad, I'm just very much in a place of peace. And the relationship between my mother and I is better than what it's ever been. And it's so interesting because now as I'm in a different space and I have conversations with her, I'm able to see with much more clarity the struggles that she still has today because of the experiences that she's went through. And so to now be in a place where I can care for her in a very healthy way, that's such a gift. And I don't think I would be there if I hadn't finally come to terms with what had happened and how to forgive and separating the issue from the person I love. And so that was very freeing.
That's actually such a beautiful story, Christy, and one that I know resonates with a lot of people. And it speaks to the power of love and the ability to build trust too. And you've demonstrated resilience, which is such an important trait to develop in our children, and one that is oftentimes kind of underplayed. So in light of your journey, finish this sentence. My life improved when I
became driven to return to college and pursue my career.
How many years? What was the gap between?
So I actually started out of high school. So my mom and dad didn't, and I would say, once again, they're not bad people. They're good people. It's just their own context, right? In that my family, I am the only college graduate. And even amongst my cousins who are the same generation, I still remain the only college graduate in my family. And so there wasn't an emphasis on that or any really knowledge about what it is and what it isn't. So I went to community college. I married very young at the age of 19 and shortly after had my daughter. And so all of that to say, I went to the counselor and I said, this is what I want to do, but I was working, right? So you talk about issues of gender inequality. I'm like, I got to figure all this out. And I didn't get news that was helpful. So I'm like, well, I'm tapping out because like, I got to take care of my family, you know? And at the time I was working at Sears Portrait Studio. In fact, I worked for Sears Portrait Studio for nearly a decade. I started while I was in high school. I ended up in management. And And so my daughter was two when I no longer was going to community college. I didn't go back until she entered elementary school. And it was one morning during the Christmas season, I was working at Sears Portrait Studio and this family came in who had a child with a disability and we started having a conversation and like the spark went off inside of me. And I'm like, I can do something besides work at Sears Portrait Studio for the rest of my life. And that fire started and I went back to community college and I was on a fast track. And so I guess I'll say that the rest is history, but it's interesting when we come upon people or certain experiences where just something clicks. And that was my moment for me. And so, yes, it definitely improved my life and not only my life, but the life of my children.
That blink moment, or in the case of the Sears moment, that flash moment forever changed you. And so as you think about not only your life changing, there's this decision that you've already kind of foreshadowed for us. So let's go ahead and finish that final part of it and have it come in the form of this sentence, Deb. A decision I made that changed my life forever. I have a hunch where this is going.
Yes, I would say my decision to pursue a career in leadership. Yeah. You know, it has fulfilled me in ways that I would have never have imagined to be possible. And in fact, as I mentioned earlier on in our time together this morning, you know, I texted my children in preparation of today and said, you know, I'm excited for this and this is what we're talking about. And, you know, my son texts back and he says, you know, we're so proud of you, Mom, like you have inspired us. And I texted back and I said, thank you, son. I said, but the lesson I need you to hear is that it's not about me. It's about being in a space where you can impact and have influence on the greater good. That's my why. And so I just feel so blessed and that I've had people invest in me. I've had mentors such as Kent and Carl that have helped propel me in my journey, if you will. But I will tell you, my life is full in the right kind of way. And much of that is because of the opportunities that have been afforded to me in leadership.
Well, you know, we cannot begin to thank you enough for this powerful conversation today. I know I've learned a tremendous amount from you, not only from the past, but from the present and hopefully in the future. And Keisha, I'm wondering, what have you learned from this conversation?
Let me tell you, Christy, your story is so incredible and inspiring. And I'm imagining young girls out there with young families and big dreams who are feeling and thinking, you know, there's no way I'm going to be able to do anything more than this. And you are proof that dreams can come true if you focus on your aspirations. If you let that little voice in your head resonate and get louder and louder and louder and become empowered to just take you on a journey. And your journey is just so incredible. And you've used it to develop yourself and to grow as a leader, and a leader that reaches into a community and improves the lives of all the children and families throughout that community. So thank you so much for that amazing work and what you do every single day to lead your district and influence your community for the good. And just thank you for being you. And thank you most of all for being on our podcast and sharing your incredible stories with our listeners. And I'm wondering if you have any final thoughts that you would like to share with our listeners, speaking of our listeners.
Yes, I would say, and these are not my words, these are the words of Brené Brown, in that courage before comfort always. It's so necessary, and not only on behalf of the children that we serve, but for the betterment of all. And so that would be my words of advice.
Well said. And as we think about what you've shared, both Keisha and Christy, I'm wondering what our listeners are reflecting on right now. And as you know, we always have a coaching question in our podcast. So building on our edubabble earlier in the show, today's coaching question is, are there boundaries to your leadership? And if so, how might you extend them?
That's a great coaching question, my friend. I hope our listeners pay attention to that and think about it and then give their response on our Twitter that I'm going to share in just a minute. And Christy, we can't thank you enough for joining us today and spending a little bit of your time with us, sharing your story and your wisdom and just your strength. You're such an incredible Shiro, and we're really thankful that you're part of our honor roll family.
And we are all leaning in. And we want you, our fierce listening community, to know that we treasure you. We know that you will lead with your inspired message that you've heard today. And it's truly special to spend time in the mind of what we're going to call a transformational superintendent.
And it absolutely transformational superintendent. I can't wait to see where you are in 5 years. It's going to be amazing. So to our listeners and to everybody that's out there, please join us for our next podcast where we highlight another Shiro in education and explore their M's. And don't forget to follow our hashtag TL Honor Roll, R-O-L-E, where you can post your response to the coaching question that Frances asked. Until then,
be fierce
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Frances Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, R-O-L-E.